Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Every Tuesday following Derek Mason, it's Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Vanderbilt's finally going to get back on the playing field, as we just talked about with Coach, and they're facing an Ole Miss team that their head coach, Lane Kiffin, was not happy with the call in their game against Auburn, was not happy in his press conference, not happy with the league and their explanation, and he's been fined. What did you make? Let's just start there. What did you make of how that played out in the Ole Miss-Auburn game?
Well, first of all, it's kind of what we all expect. You know, Lane Kiffin, for a coach who's 1-4, is stealing all of the oxygen in a league with some pretty high-profile head coaches. So, you know, based on what he's done offensively and some of the exciting games and then complaining about the officials, yeah, I think he had a good point. There seemed to be no reason for them not to review the play. And I like instant replay in college. I know a lot of people don't. I like to see the calls get made correctly, and I get frustrated. It seems like there's too many reviews and they last too long, but then you've got a case like that where it seems like they didn't review it and they should have. Very costly play, and it just happened to be that it was Auburn 2 weeks in a row. So I understand his frustration, and then all the follow-up on Twitter, which is great. So he has definitely added some fun to the league this year.
No doubt, and Mike Leach certainly came out of the gates adding some fun to the league. But, boy, Mississippi State, it's gone the wrong direction for them. I bring that up because these are the next two opponents for Vanderbilt, the Mississippi schools. And the Bulldogs, it looks like from all the reports today, they may be without their star running back for the rest of the year or forever at Mississippi State, because it sounds like all the reports out of Starkville are he's about to start focusing on his NFL draft status.
Yeah, as speaking of stealing all the oxygen, we spent probably 75% of the post week one time on talk shows writing about in the SEC was Mississippi State, and they are, and no one's talking Mississippi State the last couple of weeks. They're just they've been a non-factor. They haven't played well, and you know they haven't won games, and then now they're back in the news for the wrong reasons. And Kylan Hill, who was so pro Mike Leach after that first game, you know, where they beat LSU and saying his offense is perfect for me. And, you know, I guess it was an injury he was out with. It's not really 100% known, but now it looks like he won't be back. And he was one of the most dynamic players in the league. I mean, I think Najee Harris has proven to be the best running back in the league this year, but he was right there with him and a huge loss for that team that right now is looking for answers offensively, which we never thought we would have said after week one.
Isn't this just what this college football season is like, just trying to figure these teams out? I mean, prime example is Kentucky's last two wins, dominating fashion over Mississippi State in Knoxville, where they haven't won since 84, and then they go to Missouri and just lay a big old egg, and Missouri wins. I mean, that's just right now, not just life in the SEC, it's just life in college football in 2020, isn't it?
Yeah, Kentucky is one of the more confounding teams. They control the line of scrimmage. They dominate Tennessee, and they go play a Missouri team that won the week before but got lit up defensively, at least by LSU, and Kentucky can't do anything. 36 offensive plays for Kentucky, 92 for Missouri. In the last 20 years, there's only been 12 teams that have had 36 or fewer plays in a game, none in the SEC. So Kentucky's the first SEC team in at least 20 years to have that few plays, and they just couldn't do anything on offense. They tried Gatewood at quarterback. He didn't do anything. Kentucky possessed the ball for only 16 minutes and 50 seconds. I can't remember a number that low. And that's, again, after they controlled the line of scrimmage and controlled the ball against Tennessee. So aside from the personnel issues, trying to figure out who is on which team, you have stuff like this, like Mississippi State, that we just talked about, so great offensively, then nothing. Kentucky looks so great for a couple of weeks, and then they just can't do anything against Missouri. So you're right, Darren. We might say this every year, but it just seems like this year it's harder to figure things out week to week.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. We're talking college football. Mitch, there was so much to get into from the Big Ten's first week. It was certainly fun to have them back. But what was your biggest takeaway? What did you learn more than anything else about anybody in the Big Ten?
I don't want to say I learned that much about Ohio State, because they were probably as expected. They were really, really good. Watched pretty much every snap of that game. And they might not be as dynamic at running back as they have been in the past, or they don't have that, you know, surefire first-round pick as a pass rusher, but they're really, really good all over the place. Don't want to get, you know, overreact too much to Michigan, but they look very good offensively. Milton quarterback looked good, and they've got decent skill. They have good stable of running backs. That was a nice win. I don't want to overreact to Penn State, although they did lose another running back today. It looks like Noah Kane might be out for the year, so they're really thin there. They kind of controlled that game. You know, statistically, Indiana did nothing until that last drive when they needed to, but what a fantastic ending there. So I thought it was an eventful week in the Big Ten. Very quietly, Northwestern, which was among the worst offensive teams that we've seen out of major college football last year, in the last couple of years. Coincidentally enough, it's a former Indiana quarterback, Peyton Ramsey, who transferred. They had a big win over Maryland, who might be awful this year. Iowa goes on the road, loses to Purdue team without Rondell Moore and without Jeff Brohm. So it was a fun week in the Big Ten. There was a lot of eventful happenings.
You know, it happened in the pros as well, but the whole situational game of when do you not want to score, even when the other team is trying to let you score, I'll just never forget the look on the Penn State running back's face as he looked back to the sideline. Because he knew as he was walking in there, why is nobody chasing me? Wait a minute. What did I just do? And he was in the doghouse. James Franklin did the turnaround and walk away, and he saw all he needed to see.
Yeah, and, you know, people blame James Franklin for that. And they clearly – Franklin doesn't want to show the kid up too much, but they clearly talked about it. And I was talking to a friend of mine. It's like, that situation always comes up. And it never comes back to bite a team. Like, oh, they shouldn't have scored there. And then it happened in the pros, you know, like you said, the next day with the Falcons, back-to-back days. Real quick aside, I don't gamble, but about 5 years ago, you know, as you know, Willie, I like to pick games against the spread, did it all the time at Athlon. I had a friend going out to Vegas, and I think I put $100 on Stanford back when they were really good, I think to cover at Arizona State. Exactly. And I was watching the game like at 1 in the morning on, you know, ESPN, late Pac-12 after dark. Same situation there. Stanford needs to go in and cover. Stanford running back, no one within 20 yards, takes a knee at the one, and they don't cover, and I lose my $100 there. So that was the first thing I thought of, is when I watched the Penn State running back go in there. But, yeah, I mean, just you felt bad for the kid because it was obviously a mistake, and then it came back to haunt them in a big way.
I know Chase will probably have another Tennessee question or two for you, so I want to ask about Arkansas and just where you think they've come in terms of closing the gap between themselves and a team like Tennessee, because Tennessee is now in a situation, they've got the bye week, but their next game will be against Arkansas, and man, it will really get very noisy if they're not able to pull that game off.
Yeah, it's I was listening to one of the Athletic podcasts, the Football Grits one that I do on Thursdays, and David Ubben was on our wrap-up show on Monday, and he called it maybe the biggest, not the biggest game in the Jeremy Pruitt era, but the game they cannot afford to lose the most. They just, winning that game doesn't necessarily do much for you. Losing that game really, really hurts Jeremy Pruitt. Tennessee's still a better team. Arkansas is limited offensively. I think what we're seeing is they're among the best coached defensive teams. You know, Barry Odom, I first heard of Barry Odom back when he was defensive coordinator at Memphis, doing a great job there. And then he did a great job at Missouri. It didn't work out as a head coach, and that was a great hire Sam Pittman made bringing him on board. So, and I've made this point many times, not taking anything away from that new staff there, but if you look at the recruiting rankings, and I know not everything's about recruiting and there's attrition, Arkansas has been a top 25 recruiter for the past 5-6 years. There is talent in that program. It was kind of inexplicable how bad they got the last couple of years, but Pittman's pushing all the right buttons, but he's got some good talent. And that is before the season, obviously for Tennessee, you chalk that one up as a win, and that is far from the case right now.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So obviously the conversation about Tennessee has been, okay, what's going on with the program? Are they closing the gap? Are they truly getting better? But everybody points to Jeremy Pruitt, and rightfully so, he is the head coach. How would you evaluate Jim Chaney, though, as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, not great. I mean, a lot was made of that hire, and it depended on who you listened to. For Tennessee fans, was a great coup. Stolen from Georgia. Georgia fans and Georgia people were like, well, we kind of let him go. No love lost. They weren't shedding any tears. I think he's, who am I to sit here and say Jim Chaney's not a good play caller? Right? It's a very complex thing. But he seems to have thrived a place like Georgia when he had better players. And, he had an unbelievable offensive line, a stable of running backs, good quarterbacks, not always great quarterbacks. And you can't, when you're, Tennessee has good talent, they don't have Georgia talent, you need to be a little more creative. You can't just do the things you did when you had the better personnel. So that would be my critique of them, is maybe lack of creativity and just trying to line up and kind of smash mouth football there when, they've got good running backs, and on paper their offensive line is really good. It looks great at times there. So I don't think you can look at this season right now, Chase, and say he's done a great job.
How much, though, do you put on Jeremy Pruitt not letting him do his job fully? Because I think we've seen some instances where Jeremy Pruitt, he likes to have his hands on everything. He fired the defensive line coach because he didn't like the philosophy, and now he's coaching the defensive line. And there are, it does appear that he's difficult to work for. So how much do you think that factors in?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to factor in some. I think probably Jim Chaney ran into that at Georgia, too, when you work for a defensive coach. And there were some people who said that about Andy Ludwig early in his tenure at Vanderbilt, that Derek Mason was the one who was holding him back. And I thought it was the lack of talent that held him back. And then as Kyle Shermer got older and better and the talent around him increased, that you saw that offense really take off the last couple of years. So I think there's always something to that, because it is – the head coach, but it's up to a guy like Pruitt to really let his offensive coordinator run that offense, be the head coach of the offense, because I'd imagine it's difficult for a guy like Jim Chaney or any of these high profile coordinators to do their job if they've got the head coach kind of listening in too much. And one thing I'll say about Pruitt is sometimes you appreciate his honesty. It was after the Kentucky game when, as fans and media, we can watch, I think it was the first pick six where they threw that out to the wide side of the field, is one of those where you throw it 40 yards to gain 7, and that was picked. And he said, basically, why are we running that play? And he said that out loud, after the fact. I don't know if it was right after the game or in the press conference later in the week, kind of questioning the play call and the play design there. So I thought that was very interesting, but I'm sure Jim Chaney didn't love hearing that.
So I'm going to read you a quote. This is non-Tennessee related. I'm going to read you a quote from a prominent college football player, and I don't know if these guys have heard this either. Quote, my mindset has been that I'm going to move on. But who knows? There's a lot that could happen. That is from Trevor Lawrence, and it's an article on ESPN hinting that maybe he stays for a senior season. I don't buy it. I think it's baloney. I think he realizes he's going to the Jets and is having second thoughts. Understandable, but what do you think of that?
I agree with you. I don't, I can't imagine a scenario where he comes back, and unless it's just something where he doesn't want to play, absolutely doesn't want to play for the Jets. And, but Justin Fields is having one game, looks great. There's nothing guaranteed that says that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick.
And maybe the Jets could win a couple games. If it's about the Jets.
No, Willie, that's crazy talk. That's not going to happen.
Come on now.
As a native, I can make fun of the Jets. But guys, and Willie will appreciate this sounds a lot like some of the elite pitchers that Vanderbilt has had who you know they're going to leave after their junior year, but they always say, well, you know what, I'll have to see what happens, see what goes in the draft, and then it's like, you know they're gone. They know they're gone, but they say stuff like that. So, I'd be shocked if he came back.
That's what I thought you would say, but just wanted to throw that out there. At first,
because I hadn't seen that quote, you scared me. I thought it was like something like he's saying, well, you know what? I thought he was going to like leave mid-season. That's what I thought you were talking about, but that seems to be
because we
as
do,
anti-Trevor Lawrence as anything.
Because I think we all are wondering if in the circumstances, or if you will see some players who start looking ahead to the draft and instead of just not playing the bowl game, don't play the last three games or something like that. I do wonder that.
Well, Kylin Hill, we don't know the circumstances at Mississippi State, but, you know, that's what this kind of smells like. You know, he got hurt a little bit, banged up, missed some games, and just team's not doing as well. So I'm moving on there. And I forgot where I saw this quote. And who knows what NFL teams really – sometimes we overestimate how much they care about character and stuff like that. But the way NFL teams look, there's one thing about missing a bowl game, but there's another thing about bailing on your team, even in these times, like three or four games into the season. If you commit to the season and then leave, maybe that affects the way an NFL team looks at a guy. There was a specific quote. I don't know. It was one of the draft guys, and I forgot which player it was about, but that one kind of was interesting to me.
I will say this, if ever there were a guy that, you know, would just buck the trend and say, I love my time here so much. And if they come up short, don't win the national championship, I mean, he would fit that mold of just, he loves Clemson. He loves his teammates. He wants to give it one more shot, even though everybody would be telling him, you're stupid, don't do it.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, when you asked me the question initially, you know, I still maintain that he'll won't be back, but I do agree that of all the guys that have come through, if you were going to say, you know, pick one or rank the guys that would buck that trend and come back for fourth year, it would be him. And, you know, it's clearly not the same thing because Trevor Lawrence is going to be the first or second pick in the draft. But, you know, Najee Harris is a guy that came back at Alabama, even though he was a draft eligible junior. He's having a great senior year, probably helped himself out. But again, there's probably just way too much risk involved for Trevor Lawrence.
Mitch, good stuff as always. We'll do it again after Coach Mason next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday. We call it Mitch After Mason around 1:15 or so. We'll have more. We'll wrap up the show. But first, Darren, tell us more about DraftKings.
I will. Legal sports betting is coming to Tennessee really, 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 really soon. Just around the corner, the best way to get in the action is with DraftKings. DraftKings is bringing their experience as a leader in daily fantasy sports to the sports betting world. They've created America's top-rated sportsbook app, DraftKings Sportsbook, to celebrate this momentous event. DraftKings is giving everyone who registers now a $50 free bet to use once. DraftKings Sportsbook, and when it becomes fully operational here in Tennessee. And all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code 1025GAME. When you sign up, those who sign up right now will get a $50 free bet to use once the mobile sports betting site hits Tennessee. That code again, 1025GAME, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem or wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.